Welcome to 3GT, the podcast where three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner, discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Welcome back to another exciting episode of Three Guys Theologizing, where Barry York, the president of seminary, where Kyle Borg, the pastor of a lovely church in Winchester, Kansas, and Scott Hunt, a lowly attorney and ruling elder in Marion, Indiana, get together and discuss items of import and theological significance for you all. We do have a good time doing it. I do wish that you all could hear some of the shenanigans that take place prior to our recording. I am told that they are fun. I would suggest that we record them sometime and let you all listen to them, but Kyle takes exception to that request. But anyway, I digress. It is good to be back together with you, our listeners, and with Kyle and Barry today. And today we're going to talk about something that I think has people. One thing you all might not realize is I like to use big words, even though I don't know what they mean, and I use them in the wrong context. I'm not going to do that right now.
Ding, ding, ding. You sure do.
But one thing, I wrote this word down so I try to pronounce it properly. One thing that gives people a visceral reaction is to say that we should have a love for the law. And we want to talk about that today. Most of the broader church, the broader evangelical church, has a low view of the law. And there are many reasons for that. And I'd like to maybe discuss some of that today. Also like to get your guys' thoughts on how we should view the law and what our attitude should be about the law. One of the verses that I think are most often used in this response to telling somebody they should respect the law, love the law of God, is that I'm not under law, but I'm under grace. So I don't have to worry about the law. Have either of you heard that used when you talk about the law of God?
Sure have.
Well, that was profound, Kyle. Thank you very much.
Just to be clear, I mean, it is a biblical thing that is said. I think that it's wrested from its context and its proper biblical interpretation. But people love it. You know, it's Romans 6:14. And I think people love to throw it around and say, I'm under grace, not under law. Don't tell me what to do. And that's not Paul's point in Romans 6. But yes, I have heard that expression thrown around by people wrongly.
What about you, Barry?
Well, Scott, you said a few minutes ago that you're going to say a big word, and I just keep waiting for the big word.
I said visceral.
Oh, visceral.
Wow, visceral.
Oh, visceral. What's your big word?
Yeah, hey.
Well, you know, I know in your ivory tower of your presidential hall, Barry.
Thank you.
That's probably a very little word. But to some of us, the word visceral is a pretty big, sublime word.
Okay. When was the last time you used that word in conversation, Barry? We'll get back to the law here in just a second, but when was the last time you used that word?
It's just been such a long time.
Man. Anyway, back to the topic at hand. Have you encountered, Barry, people who kind of have an adverse reaction to this idea that we should have some kind of love for the law?
Oh, yes, certainly. I think that I was just teaching a class today, and we were talking about in the worship of God, that because he's a God of not only love, but also of justice, that as we worship him, we should love righteousness and love the justice that he represents, and that then implies that we need to love the law that he's given to us that displays that justice. But that's not a way that we often think. We don't think about loving justice. Yet if you think through what life is like when there isn't justice, when life is not protected, when people aren't protected. When you see injustice committed very quickly, you start wanting that. The human heart craves that ultimately. So there's a lot of confusion out there. People think they don't want justice, but if you put it in the proper setting or give them a particular framework to consider that question, they quickly realize they really should love justice. And then, of course, that would mean loving the law.
Yeah, that makes great sense. That's a great point. My question then is, why are people, in your opinion, what are your thoughts? Why are people so averse or so against this idea of loving the law? What is it about that idea and the law of God that make people almost shun it or not want to talk about it?
Well, if I can distinguish, you say people in general. So I would distinguish between Christians and non-Christians.
Sure.
I'm a little more interested in this discussion from a Christian perspective. Mm-hmm. In some ways, we can't expect a non-Christian to love the law of God. The Apostle Paul teaches in Romans chapter 8 that, you know, the mind that's controlled by sinfulness is at enmity with God. It cannot approve and love the things of God. It just can't. And so, obviously, non-Christians are going to hate the law of God. They're not going to see it as a good thing, which it is. Romans 7 teaches us that. The law is good, holy, and righteous. And so I just want to distinguish that between Christians and non-Christians. That as far as non-Christians go, well, they hate the law of God because their mind is at enmity to God.
So, which kind of begs the question, why do Christians almost have the same type of attitude about the law of God?
I believe a lot of it has to do...
Or do they?
Well, I think so. I believe a lot of Christians are under false teachings, and that's why they don't love God's law. It comes out in antinomianism, against the law, because people take certain phrases in the New Testament and use them to think that we don't have to... have an appreciation for the law. Sometimes I call these verses Trump verses, not in the sense of our president, but rather like when you're playing cards and you have a card of one suit that can trump other cards of other suits. People do that with Bible verses. So we know in Romans, Paul says we're not under law, but under grace. And so when you start talking about the necessity, for instance, of a Christian to obey the Ten Commandments. Sometimes you'll hear people say that we're not under law anymore. We're under grace. We're free now. And they wrongly associate the grace of Christ and the forgiveness that he grants to us to mean that now we don't have an obligation to keep the law anymore. And it'd be like if I got pulled over for a speeding ticket and it was, you know, I was quite substantially over the limit, but for some reason the state trooper decided to let me go and was gracious toward me. And so then I get back in my car and take off and I just go right up to the same speed again and he pulls me over. I've abused the law. And what I should have done out of appreciation for him not giving me the ticket is to observe the law. And I think a lot of Christians think that same way. They've been forgiven of their sins, and then they equate that then without a need to keep the law. But God's word clearly teaches that we're to obey it.
Yeah, I think Christians cannot appreciate this, the idea that we are to love God's law. And I think it can be for a number of reasons, like some of what Barry's been saying. I think there's a lot of ignorance and a lot of misunderstanding. You know, people latch on to a verse like Romans 6:14 and just do not understand the context in which Paul is writing that. I think people get very skittish, you know, rightly so. The Pharisees were antagonistic to the ministry of Jesus and Jesus to them, largely oftentimes presented on the grounds that they were legalistic. I think that's true. I think they're more than just legalistic. But, you know, people are always just so scared of the Pharisee syndrome. You know, you're being Pharisaical. You know, you bring up obedience, you bring up obedience to the law of God, and that accusation just begins to be flung. Well, you're so legalistic. And I think that is a tremendous amount of ignorance and misunderstanding as to what legalism actually is. I think that Christians can also not appreciate the law due to experiences in their lives. You know, there are people who bark out the commands of God in a way that I don't think is in keeping with the commands of God, where it's not a joy, it's not a delight, it's not seen as something that's good. It's seen as that cranky dad that just says, do what I do or do what I say because I'm telling you to do it. You know, and people can recoil at that, and they use their experience very wrongly, but they use their experience to interpret the scriptures and to say, you know, well, I had a cranky dad or I had a cranky pastor or something that just barked those orders, and they just don't want to be associated with that.
One of the points that Kyle raises, I think, is really important in this discussion, as he talked about, we often don't define what legalism is. A lot of people think of legalism as too much attention to God's law. And that's actually not really what legalism is. Legalism is replacing God's law. Jesus condemned the Pharisees because they set aside the law of God, the commands of God, for the sake of their own tradition. So at least one aspect of legalism would be replacing what God teaches with man-made law, or men taking God's law and twisting it and adding to it more than what it was originally intended. Like you see, for instance, the Pharisees and some of their Sabbath-keeping laws, they pushed and added all these additional laws on top of the commandment to keep the Sabbath day, and took what was supposed to be a gift of freedom and joy and a day of worship and turned it into a bunch of regulations and rules. And some people then think, because Jesus was speaking against that interpretation and practice of the Sabbath day, that that means that God's just done away with the Sabbath altogether. But that's clearly not there, as the Sabbath day is one of our Ten Commandments.
So is it fair to say then that somebody who accuses a person who loves the law of God of being Pharisaical and legalistic really have a misunderstanding or a wrong understanding of what the Pharisees were actually doing?
I would say so. And of course, the Pharisees should have been singing the Psalms, "Oh, how I love thy law." We should be singing that Psalm and have a true appreciation for what God teaches in that law.
Yeah, I agree with that. Mark Jones has a very helpful discussion on this in his book, Antinomianism, and the way in which legalism is so wrongly thrown around in even in Reformed circles, how wrongly the term legalism is thrown around. And I think we need to be very careful with that term.
You know, you've both now used a big word that some of us lay people don't understand, antinomianism. And that, Barry, to your credit, you did kind of define what that is, so I can understand. I don't use big words like you do.
Well, I thought that was actually the word you were going to use earlier.
No, not quite. Hey, so what is this idea of antinomianism, and where does it come from?
Antinomianism, just a very literal definition, is anti-law. So it's the combination of two words, anti and nomism, nomism being the word for law. So it's anti-law. In its most obvious and unveiled form, I think antinomianism is most vividly seen in Romans chapter 6, 1. Should we go on sinning that grace may abound? By no means. Right? Those who would use the grace of God as a pretense to continue sinning, to just get rid of the law altogether, to be very opposed to it. But I think on a popular level, and maybe closer to more of our hearts, you know, antinomianism is any wrong opposition to the law of God in the Christian life, I think can be characterized to a degree as a kind of antinomianism.
I think, too, as you talk about where does it come from, of course, it, you know, it's in the heart of all of us in one way, that we don't want to be under God. We want to live life as we please. But in terms of where is its source in the modern church, again, I think there are many different places. One of them that would be readily identifiable is dispensational teachings that uphold that the God who worked with Israel in the Old Testament is now working differently with the church in the New Testament. And so there's a strong division between Israel and the church that's seen. And with that often comes then a lack of regard for the Old Testament law. So that's one place where it harkens from. But it's not limited to, as Kyle's mentioned, not limited to non-reformed systems of theology. We've seen, you know, here in recent years, a man like Tullian Chavijan uphold a view of grace that really doesn't have a place for the law in the life of the believer, as he really emphasizes justification over against almost sanctification, and really downplays the use of the law and God's people's lives.
And yeah, I agree with that. And to emphasize something else that Barry said, right? Both these things, legalism and antinomianism, are in all of our hearts. You know, I think Sinclair Ferguson recently wrote a book called The Whole Christ. And I think recently now is a few years ago already. But he rightly shows these are twin errors. Wherever the one is, the other is there. You know, the Pharisees were both legalists and antinomians. Mm-hmm. You know, they were legalists in the way they strictly followed certain laws and commands. They were legalistic in the way in which they imposed their own laws. But imposing their own laws, they were also being antinomian by hating the law of God and not fulfilling the heart of the law of God and neglecting the weightier matters of the law. And that's really, it's so easy to point the fingers till you realize these guys, in some sense, they're supposed to be a mirror of what's in all of our hearts. Legalism and antinomianism are always close there. And both of them, and I think Sinclair Ferguson is the one that so wonderfully and eloquently demonstrates this, both legalism and antinomianism have a very low view of the law of God and a very wrong view of the law of God.
Well, I guess it leads to the next obvious question, as far as I'm concerned, is what is our obligation then with respect to the law of God? If antinomianism and legalism are two sides of the same coin, as it were, what is our obligation and what should we do and how should we treat the law of God?
Well, I do think it's very important for us to understand where the law of God comes in the Christian life. You know, and this is another reason why I think some people get antagonistic to the law of God. When it comes to our justification, Scripture is very clear that our law keeping is antagonistic to our justification. I am not justified by my doing of the work of the law. I am justified by the doing of another, Jesus Christ, and his perfect righteousness. And so we need to understand that when it comes to the aspect of the gospel, which we call justification, the law of God, my obedience to the law of God is not so much a friend to justification. But we need to understand that in the life of sanctification, the law of God is made my friend by the grace of God. And the whole point of sanctification is that the Spirit would renew us in the inward man, that we might bear fruits of holiness, and those fruits being measured by the law of God, because it's the law of God that defines what is holy and righteous and good. And so there is a great need for us. This isn't just theological hair splitting. There is a great need for us to understand these things. Because even in the way in which the Apostle Paul writes, as he explains the gospel, he is so, so clear that when it comes to my justification, my keeping of the law, my obedience of the law, my delight in the law, my whatever you might have, has nothing to do with my justification. But I am sanctified in order that I might delight in the law of God and love the law of God and walk in the law of God. So I think that's a very important thing for us to understand.
And Kyle's really outlined for us two of the classical uses that we have for the law of God. The first one being that it convicts us of our sin and drives us to Christ for our justification. There's also the use of the law to restrain evil in this world. But the third use of the law is in the life of the believer, as Kyle's pointing out, in the area of sanctification, that we should be learning more and more to love what is holy. And God's law is holy and good and just, as he said. And so we should be learning to love that law and appreciate that law more and more in our lives. I think we see that in our Lord's teaching. So many Christians claim to love the Sermon on the Mount, but I don't think sometimes they realize that it's a large measure a sermon on the law, a meditation on the law of God. And Jesus tells us he didn't come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it, to provide a way for us and our lives to follow it. And then he begins to teach about the law, going through different commandments and taking away some of the misinterpretations of the day of those commandments and then applying them deeply into the heart and lives of his followers. And so if you say you don't love the law of God, then you'd almost have to say you don't love the Sermon on the Mount, and which, you know, what Christian wants to say that?
Yeah, and with that, not only the Sermon on the Mount, you know, I remember when law gospel issues, which is kind of what we're getting into here, and maybe this is for another episode, were extremely difficult for me to sort through and to try to understand. It actually almost kept me from becoming a pastor. But, you know, not only the Sermon on the Mount, which Jesus is teaching us there, the ethics of the kingdom, right? He's not teaching the Sermon on the Mount to simply show us our need for imputed righteousness. He's showing us the righteousness that the kingdom and citizens of the kingdom begin to manifest. But with that, you know, you think of Psalm 119. You know, Psalm 119 is 176 verses of how much the psalmist loves the law of God and how much it's a delight to him. And, you know, that's a profound reality of the gospel, that because of what Jesus has done and because of what Jesus is doing by his Spirit in my life, my mind, which at once was at enmity toward God, as Paul says in Romans 8, is set free from the dominion of that death and that condemnation to actually love and delight in the law of God, so that I, in Jesus, can sing Psalm 119 from my heart, that I love the statutes, I delight in the commandments, I endeavor in the strength that he gives to keep my feet on the path, to choose his precepts. You know, Psalm 119 is the song of a redeemed person who understands these things. And it's such a wonderful psalm for that reason.
Well, and I think I had my Bible turned to Psalm 119 as we were discussing this. And it says, "Oh, how I love your law. It is my meditation all the day." That's verse 97. How do we, you know, I could speak for myself, but how do we encourage people to make the law of God the love and their meditation all day? And I guess, what does that mean? I mean, do we go around just doing nothing but thinking about the law all day? How do we make the law our meditation, and how do we encourage somebody to do that? Do you have thoughts on that?
To answer the second question first, you know, how do you get people to do that? One of the things that I think is so pivotal is, well, two things. One is to connect the law to the glory of Jesus Christ. You know, it's the glory of Jesus that ultimately is going to expel my enmity, my disdain, my hatred, my laxity, my fill in the blank. Because Jesus comes as, you know, he is the divine lawgiver. This is part of his glory, is that he saves us and we receive the law from his hand. And that's a wonderful thing. I think as well, it's so important to get people to understand as much as we can, the law is good. The Apostle Paul says that in Romans 7, the commandment is good. The commands of God are not intended to be a killjoy. They're not intended to be these bad burdens. This is for our good. This is for our flourishing spiritually, physically. This is for our good. And unless people are persuaded of that, there's going to remain this antagonism and even hostility to the law of God until people begin to see it is good because it reflects the glorious nature of a good God.
Another way, and I appreciate that, another way that I think we can practice this, God told Joshua, "This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate on it day and night." I think that's one of the ways that we Sure. Love for the law and how we can actually meditate on it is by talking about it, is taking it on our lips and having conversations with other believers about how to implement the law in our lives. I was just teaching a class and we were talking about the need to minister to the poor. And I think a lot of the church is confused about ministry of the poor, in part because we don't look at all the poverty laws that are found in the scriptures, particularly in the Pentateuch, and all the rich instruction that God gives on how we're to treat one another. And what you have to do is you have to go into those laws and look at them and sort out what's going on in Israel, why God's commanding certain things, have discussions about them. And as you do so, you start realizing there are principles and equity that's found there that we can apply into our churches and into our Christian lives. So, you know, it's just one example of taking an issue and going into the law of God, and meditating on it, and finding answers, solutions, light, and guidance for what we might be facing.
Yeah, on that, I think that one of the things that probably confuse people or they don't understand is the law of God is not like a statutory law book. It's not a bunch of rules and regulations that that apply to each specific situation, but rather it is like the common law of England, where what I studied is you go back and look at precedents. Look at how God spoke about this situation and how does this situation apply to the situation you're in now. So I think one of the burdens people have is they think God's law is somehow just this code, like the Code of Hammurabi, but it's not. It's completely different than that. And it does still apply to our life today, just like the old 16th century laws of England still have applicability to our civil laws today.
And I think that's really important when we think about the law of God. Again, we often go to the first five books of the Bible and you think, well, I mean, there's a lot of stories there. So we're learning about God's ways through the narratives of people. There are statutes and commandments, but then there's also case studies, the guy picking up sticks on the Sabbath day or other stories that are found there, case law that we can determine arise there. So it's important to go into those passages and study to be familiar with them, because then it gives you the principles that you can live by. Another way I think of meditating too, Scott, is that, and you've really in a sense already indicated it, but you mentioned Psalm 119, and that's a song, and part of what the Psalms are the law in song form, so that we can sing about it, and it gets in our memories more as we sing God's word. And I think that's a very rich way of meditating on his law and drawing more life from it.
Well, we're about out of time here, but one of the things that I like when we discuss things together is kind of what the outcome is. What do you hope to see? What do you desire to see? So as we talk about this loving the law of God, what is our desire to be for other people? Why do we want people to love the law? What is the outcome here? Why is this important?
I referred to Joshua 1:8 earlier, and I didn't finish the verse, but he says to meditate on the law so that you can be prosperous and make your way successful. And that's not the prosperity gospel that God is speaking of there. But again, you think of Joshua's situation. He was going into a very difficult assignment into warfare and overcoming what was going on in the land of Canaan. And he needed the wisdom God's law would supply in order to lead the people and accomplish that task. And so one of the things that why we want people to know God's law is it's just going to give them the wisdom that they need to live life faithfully. Now, the first psalm pictures the guy meditating on God's law day and night, like a tree planted by streams of water that's always growing, always bearing fruit. And I think that those who are really immersed in the law of God and drawing from its riches will be fruitful for Christ. And be able to serve him and have a strength of a character and soul that other people can rely upon and draw from.
Yeah, and amen to all of that. And once again, a right understanding of the law is going to lead us to the glory of Jesus Christ. And it's going to help us to appreciate his person, his work, and really the glories of the gospel. And so I think that's so important.
Yeah. And it sounds to me like what you're saying is a love of the law is necessary to do what is mentioned in the very first question of the Shorter Catechism, which is to enjoy God and glorify him forever. Without a true love of the law, I don't know how that is possible to fully do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. I mean, yeah, to glorify God and to enjoy him. The law is a means by which we come to enjoy God. And that's a wonderful truth to meditate on. Yeah.
Well, I think that'll we'll wrap things up on that note. We do want to thank you for joining us and for listening here on 3GT. We love your feedback. Believe it or not, we do look for that and enjoy getting your feedback. So we would invite you to send your thoughts, your comments, your questions, ideas for topics. We also love your support, both not only listening, but also supporting us, keeping us on the air. So if you are so inclined, you can support us financially or just by listening. But we do want to thank you for joining us today. So until next time, thank you very much.